Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by visiting IMSAradio.com or search for IMSA Radio wherever they get their podcasts.
Now we get to the complex point in the race where the MEC points are awarded. Now, Shea Adam is always on top of this sort of thing, but so what have we had? 18 hours done. Yeah, so three quarters distance and therefore a milestone for the Endurance Cup points to be awarded. They're not as big as the overall points that, that everybody gets at the end of the campaign, but spreadsheets galore with Shay, and I'm probably going to wait until she's worked it all out and is back on air in just over an hour's time to deliver who stands where. But points are awarded at various positions or various points in the 24 hours. Brilliant. She's going to send it along once they are published, and I presume that Alcamel, the timing company that look after things here at the Daytona 24 Hours, will produce a document as well to let us know who is in the leading position as far as that's concerned. Leading position overall on the racetrack, slightly easier to read, is Alexander Rossi, but now by only 2.9 seconds. So Kevin Magnussen is chiselling away at that gap, and readily. So we're not going to be very far away from a neck and neck battle for the lead of the race. It's also very tight in GTLM for John Edwards and Davide Rigon, who are heading into turn number six. Nothing between those two cars. Maybe a BMW length, and that is about it. Heading up onto the high banks for yet another time. And GTLM has just remained as close as it ever was, really, Joe. In fact, 4 seconds, I think, represents the biggest gap we've had for the last 5 or 6 hours between the two Corvettes. Still absolutely nothing.
It's settled down, though, hasn't it? We had four cars pretty much nose to tail. It's settled down insofar as the two Corvettes, the leading number four, has now got a gap of about 4 seconds. Nick Tandy at the wheel of that. The number three at the wheel, 4 seconds is the deficit there. And then Jordan Taylor has got 9 seconds to the BMW of John Edwards, who pretty much has got Davide Rigon breathing down his neck in the 62 Ferrari. And that's the actual on-track battle that we can... keep an eye on. However, on saying that, Johnny, a 9 second gap from the BMW to the first of the Corvettes and then a further 4 seconds is absolutely nothing, and all that would take is tripping over a slower car, getting through traffic, and then that race can be spread out and can be a completely different look to what we are looking at right now. So it's everything's still to play for, and everybody's still pushing without risk, I think, is the term I've overly used this weekend.
You're in good company, though, with a certain Lena Gay, master of that statement. Just a slight feathering the throttle I noticed there from Darren Turner in the 23 Heart of Racing Aston Martin, well aware that two GTLM cars wanted to get by just before the kink at four, and he allowed them the real estate in order to do that. So the Aston Martin... forty-second gap to Mikael Grenier in the Sun Energy 1 Mercedes. So DT, I was right first time, it is a 90-second gap, in fact, to Colton Herta. So Aston Martin chasing Turner Motorsport BMW, that's probably where the confusion crept in, Darren Turner and Turner Motorsport, with Mikael Grenier in the 75 Sun Energy 1 car running in sixth position. Tightest battle in GT Daytona remains for the race lead, though, which is how we like it. AF Corsa Ferrari Daniel Serra definitely ahead of Maro Engel now on the road and leading by 1.8 seconds. Ferrari versus Mercedes at the sharp end of GT Daytona. Andrea Caldarelli remains in third position. There's another pit stop for the Whelan Engineering Cadillac. Pretty swift turnaround there. Philippe Massa brought it in, and I believe stays at the wheel as well. It's such a quick stop, I'm not sure they could could have got a driver in and out at that sort of speed. Into pit road comes John Edwards, by the way, and he sits on board the number 24 BMW whilst the team work rapidly around him to change Michelin tyres. It is indeed Philippe Nasser who stays at the wheel of 31, heading back into the race in fifth position. I'm very interested in how Harry Tinknell's getting on here, because he's 2 minutes and 58 seconds away from the Nasser Cadillac. It'll be closer than that now that Felipe has made his stop. And that is less than two laps around here. Two laps will take you over the three-minute mark. And Tinknell's got it down to less than that, far, far less than that, to the next car. So it's a lap deficit to Felipe Nasser, therefore a lap deficit to the overall race leader as well. So persistence is key, as we have mentioned. And car 55, I would wager, has got two of its three laps back again now. Stellar work from Mazda Motorsports, and they are now very much in the envelope, the operating window, to gain that final lap back, perhaps in the next caution. And surely you've got to bank on there being at least one more caution in the remaining 5 hours and 51 minutes. We've managed to run for the last hour and nearly 45 minutes without one, mind you. And that one was a pretty swift affair at 18 and a half minutes in duration. Prior to that, we'd had over an hour's worth of green flag running. And at the other side of the previous caution to that, it was an hour and 23. The longest green flag run I make as 3 hours and 49, nearly 50 minutes. And that happened after we had sort of four cautions relatively close to one another within the first 3 hours, and then finally we got almost 4 hours of green after that. And the cautions, though fairly regular, have been pretty infrequent, I would suggest, on average about an hour apart, and we're almost close to 2 hours now being clear of those pesky yellows. And this is a useful time for the teams to really work out where they are in terms of speed and pace and back timing to the end of the race as well. We're possibly still a bit too far out from 3:40 for doing that, bearing in mind that the DPIs will be doing 40-odd minute stints, maybe slightly more. So there's still a lot of 40 minutes to the end of the race, and you don't want to get too far ahead of yourself. As we've said on several occasions, tear off not being removed from the number 60 car. Instead, a wipe of the windshield will suffice for the Sirius XM sponsored number 60 Meyer Shank Racing Acura. And Olivier Pla will stay at the wheel of that car. Also in for another pit stop on lap number 608 is the Ally Cadillac Racing car of Simon Pagenaud. And rejoining in the Mazda, Harry Tinknell. Oh, now, is this the point where he goes back to two laps down? I think it is. So it was because he owed us a pit stop that was throwing me slightly off. Gained the lap because everybody ahead of him had made the stop and he hadn't. And order is restored. Onto pit road.
Lead is in as well, Johnny.
Yes, Joe. You're watching that
just
stop.
Just ahead of the number 60 and the 48, Olivier Pla, Simon Pagenaud. We've got Kevin Magnussen coming in, Alex Rossi also in. They are the two leading cars. The Chip Ganassi Cadillac of Kevin Magnussen taking on tyres and fuel, and also Alexander Rossi getting off the pit apron first. However, that's by dint of it being at pit in. That was
Joe. We're going to head to
a
VP Racing Fuels pit and paddock report now.
Ah, brilliant.
Because
go ahead, Johnny.
Yeah. Well, you dictate it, being our VP Racing Fuels Pit and Paddock member, because João Barbosa now joins us on the line here at RS2 IMSA Radio.
Ah, excellent. João, great that we've managed to contact you. Hopefully you can hear us okay.
Yeah, no problem. I can hear you fine.
Ah, brilliant. It's thanks for getting in touch with us. Your car currently running in the LMP3 class, sharing the car to 33 car, isn't it, that you're down to run, I believe, the Screech, the Sean Creech Motorsport. The question I want to ask is, it might be an awkward one, you might not know the answer, but it kind of happened in front of us and we didn't notice, but your car dropped away from the leading LMP3 car, and I'm finding it hard to fathom out why.
That's a good question. because when we lost that time, we did a mandatory 8-minute stop, and I was actually slipping. So when I got back to the pits, we were a few laps back. So I'm not really sure how that happened. Maybe, I mean, the 8 minutes just run really quick, and we lost a few laps. We did the stop on the yellow, which shouldn't been that bad, and they did a pretty quick stop, I mean, considering we had to change brakes. But I was a little bit surprised, but still 6 hours to go. I mean, we still have a full Watkins Glen race to go, and still a lot can happen.
Yeah, very much. We get carried away, don't we, when we see 6 hours to go. We think we're nearly there, but we're very much not. Joe, you're very experienced at this race. You are more familiar with him in the DPI category, but this year sees you in an LMP3, albeit it's a prototype, but a very different prototype. Can you take us through the major differences in the cars?
It is very different. Obviously, we have less aero, less power, and less brakes. We still use the steel brakes, and DPIs, they use the carbon brakes. So that's a huge difference there. Power-wise, it's a big difference. And also in aerodynamics, this car is not as good as the DPI. But overall, it's really fun to drive and makes good racing. It's running really good. People were expecting for the cars not to be as strong as they are, but the team has done a great job in preparing the car, and it's running very strong. We haven't missed a bit yet.
And how have you found dealing with traffic? Because the lap time, a well-driven LMP3 car is kind of on a par with a GTLM car, and the lap times are very similar, but both of those categories of cars produce that lap time in a very different way. And we've seen some problems with the LMP3s and the GTLMs. Have you found that to be the case?
It's a big challenge for sure, because like you said, we do the lap time in different parts of the track, and our cars, everybody's taking really careful, taking as much time as possible, because the cars, nobody really knows if the cars can handle really close contact racing, and the GT cars, they're very strong, very reliable, so and they push us around, so they're really quicker on the straights than we are. And if they feel we're going to slow them down at all, they just block you. And it just makes racing very interesting on my side, very different from what I'm used to. I'm not used to deal with overtaking cars and being overtaken by a faster class. But I'm having a blast so far. So it's running very good. The car is fun to drive. Different classes. I'm in the middle of everything, so it's very busy all the time. So it's a good experience.
Excellent. Now, tell me about the psychology of where you're at. You're a few laps down off the leader. What's the strategy? How do you guys go about the final 5 hours and 43 minutes is on the clock? What approach do you take to the final stages of this race?
We're going to do the same approach as we've taken this far. Just trying to keep the car clean, no contacts, and try to do safe race. Try to avoid all kinds of problems and be very conservative for now. 6 hours is still a long way to go. And we don't have the outright speed compared to the 74. We're a little bit down on top speed. We might be carrying a little more aero, so they're a little quicker than us. So we'll see. We'll see. We just need to keep doing our job like we've been doing so far, keeping our nose clean, and we'll see what happens at the end.
Thank you, Joe. We wish you all the very best of luck with the rest of this race. But I've got one out-of-the-box question before you go. You're a familiar name that I see iRacing most afternoons. You're a big sim racing fan. So I've got a question that all of the sim racers out there who, indeed, last weekend were probably competing in the iRacing Daytona 24 Hours. Just how close is that sim to being here and racing for real?
I might be a little bit the old school, right? I mean, the sim is really good to keep, especially to keep your mind sharp and to get you used to run like long stints and keep the concentration up, because it's very tough. The sim is very tough. If you lose a little bit your focus, you're completely out, and that's not easy for sure. It's a big help on that perspective. Driving wise, it's really a good help, and understanding the car, the track. If you haven't been to a new track, it's really good to do that. But feeling wise, I mean, there's nothing that can compare to a real car, right? iRacing, they've done a tremendous job. It's as close as you could get, I think. But when you don't have the real seat, when you don't feel the car on your butt, it's very difficult to reproduce that feeling. So I'm still drive a lot by feel, a lot by what the car tells me, and not just by visual. That's what a lot of the kids nowadays are doing. So I still missing on the iRacing. I still miss that part. It's impossible to reproduce.
Joe, that's great insight. I'm sure all of our iRacing fans there appreciate that insight. I want to thank you very much for talking to us. We'll let you go now, and the very best of luck with the rest of this race, and give everyone all our very best at Sean Creech Motorsport, would you?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, and you guys are doing a great job, and let's see how this race is going to finish.
He was a race winner in 2018. That's João Barbosa chatting to Joe Bradley and our latest VP Racing Fuels pit and paddock reports. Thanks to Joe Barbosa, and we'll look forward to seeing him later in this event. It's the 59th edition of the Rolex 24 at Daytona with Joe Bradley and Johnny Palmer in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. Don't forget, you can get in touch at IMSA Radio is the social media handle to aim your tweets and other such things towards, and make sure you include the hashtag R24Radio as well. As we reach another hour in terms of ticking over into the 10th hour of the day, that is, and there are 18 hours and 20 minutes gone in the race, so 1 minute past 10 on the eastern seaboard, with near perfect conditions, it would appear. No hint of any rain on the horizon just yet. And down towards the first couple of corners go battling GT Daytona cars, with Nicholas Nielsen now installed in the AF Corsa Ferrari 488 GT3 and leading Philip Ellis by 0.8 of a second. Just hearing about a possible drama for the Turner BMW number 96, which was spotted as running slow through Speedway Turn 3. It's got to the pits, but it looked like the rear left was rubbing and actually manifested itself into a puncture. So that was the reason why the car was going slowly, and the car has already returned to the race. So that was Colton Herter, who had to come in for an unscheduled stop, but the team dealt with it very, very quickly. I suppose they had ample warning with the news from the spotters, and also Colton, no doubt, on the radio as well to say he would be pit-bound to sort that issue out. But rear tyre failure is easily straightened by a team as experienced as Turner Motorsport, and not too much time lost there. However, much more of a story developing, Joe Bradley, for car 31. Felipe Nasr has brought the Whelen Engineering Cadillac in. Now, you and I were chatting about questions about the floor of that car, and you, of course, had heard the different engine note being produced from that car. The team maintained that's exactly as it should sound. However, the car's in the pits and is now the wrong side of the wall.
completely different issue. It's Philippe Nasr has brought the car in. It's stuck in third gear, and it's gone behind the wall. And being stuck in third gear is never a good thing. Being stuck in any gear is never a good thing, Johnny. It's kind of what the problem is internally in the gearbox. And if the so minute tolerances within these race gearboxes that literally you can't risk anything. So that car is kind of out of contention now, and it's only been in the pits behind the wall a few minutes. But for any kind of gearbox issue, they're going to have to get the car out of gear and then see if the car will actually transition through the gears up and down the box once they've freed that up.
Well, how quickly, as we've been saying so many times, a race can change complexion for one particular team. 31 well in the hunt to that point. But even though a trip behind the wall doesn't necessarily mean you are out of the race, the difficulty for them is that they've hit this issue inside the final 6 hours, so there's virtually no time to try and catch up again. If this had happened in the opening 6 hours, it might have been a different story. But as Joe makes the point as well, a gearbox issue is going to mean a lengthy period of time in the garage, and Whelan will be up for the challenge here to sort the problem out, Whelan Engineering Racing. But it takes the 31 car, if not out of the race, certainly out of contention, as Joe's just said. And it perhaps brings Harry Ticknell slightly towards, well, it does, one place closer to the podium. He's still a lap away from the race lead. Now, he has done the pit stop that he owed compared to everybody else. So when he comes in for the 31st time, that will probably drop him again two laps away. But that Mazda, for me, is inching just that little bit closer with every lap to the four DPIs that are now ahead of it. Alexander Rossi leading the race, Kevin Magnussen second, and only a tenth of a second away from the race leader. Olivier Pla is third, and in fourth position, Simon Pagenaud, as the Liqui-Moly-backed Turner Motorsport BMW had to straight line the bus stop chicane on that lap. And remember, that car has just had a new rear Michelin tyre fitted to it after a slow puncture, or a complete puncture, was detected. So it was Colton Herter, wasn't it, brought the car in and took it back out again. Neck and neck for the lead through the tri-oval. It's the 10 car to the outside, it's the 0-1 to the inside. Alexander Rossi just about hanging on to it, as clipping the dust there on the inside of turn two is Kevin Magnussen in car 0-1. They also had the Heart of Racing Aston Martin to nip by safely, which they have done through turn 2A and in and out of the International Horseshoe. This is really livening up. 5.5 hours there may still be to go, but we have got a ding-dong scrap, Joe Bradley, at the sharp end of the field between two stellar sports car drivers. Kevin Magnussen less experienced, okay, than Alexander Rossi, but that does not stop him going completely the other side of a BMW from GT Daytona to try and gain the advantage.
You've got two single-seater hotshots coming together at the Daytona 24 hours. It's not an unfamiliar sight, is it, to see these two young drivers going at it tooth and nail. They are at the top of their game. And what we're going to see now, just sit back, enjoy this. And it's going to be all about getting through the traffic. And as we go into the bus stops again, two cars ahead of them, we've got a Porsche just ahead, followed by a Ferrari. He gets around the Porsche just on pure acceleration and momentum out of the bus stop chicane. He'll make swift work, both cars making swift work of both the Porsche and the Ferrari as they come out of Speedway Turn 4 and down that straight to the tri-oval. Magnussen will want to try and get some kind of slipstream effect going into the braking area, and he does indeed. Looks to the inside, but no, Rossi had the momentum and takes the conventional textbook line there, JP.
Fantastic to witness, though, and it reminds me somewhat of the scrap we were enjoying in GT Daytona a few hours ago between Mauro Engel and Daniel Serra. Eventually the Ferrari did get in front in that particular class and is still being led by Nicholas Nielsen. But a sort of similar scenario. I would say that Kevin Magnussen's got more opportunities around the lap to be able to pull off the overtake, though, because that second-placed Cadillac looks very, very strong, and the Acura in certain places is having to defend mightily in order to keep Kevin Magnussen behind as he four-wheel drifts the 0-1 car into turn six to give it much tighter route through the apex and therefore on the exit. So he was able to apply the pressure, the throttle in more of a straight line than the Acura, which was heading up onto the high bank. And this could be Magnussen's opportunity. He's going to have to do it the difficult way around the outside. Can he break later? Yes, he can. That, for me, is one of the overtakes of the race, so long as he can keep it on the road. But no, he can't. He'd run too deep into the bus stop chicane, and Alexander Rossi takes the place back again. But brilliant understanding between the two of them. That was high-risk motorsport with 5.5 hours still to go in this race. And Magnussen, ultimate faith in the braking capacity of this Cadillac. He almost got the move done there. But Rossi, slightly more experienced around this place, I think sensed that Magnussen was carrying too much forward momentum into the bus stop, knew he was probably going to end up out in the weeds, and just eased out of the throttle to allow Magnussen to make that very slight error. And of course now what Magnussen's done is put dirt on his tyres, and it's going to take a bit of time to maintain optimum lap speed once again. But that was a brilliant half overtake, I'm going to call it.
He was through that bus stop chicane, Johnny. He was kind of out of control, and it was the ultimate skill of a driver like Kevin Magnussen that kept that car on the track, or barely on the track. I know he put a huge amount of wheel off. By coming around the outside of Rossi, he was actually making that first part of the bus stop chicane more of a corner than it actually is. You can take a much shallower line into there, and Rossi was on that. He saw Magnussen coming around his outside and thought, there you go, mate, you have a go. And Magnussen was so skillful in gathering it up. They're out onto Speedway Turn 2 now and heading down towards the bus stop again. I don't think we're going to get a repeat of what we've just seen, Johnny, as Magnussen has dropped away. He's lost a bit of time there with completely losing his momentum through the bus stop. And as you said, probably getting a bit of detritus on that rear right wheel, which completely compromised him on that lap. But I'm pretty sure it's not going to be long before we see Magnussen challenging Rossi again. This is just like fist fight, isn't it? This is fabulous. Two of the world's fastest single-seater drivers into this Daytona 24 Hours in the fastest sports cars we have in the IMSA series, and they are absolutely flat out at this stage of the race.
The application of their aerodynamic knowledge and how that applies to a open wheel, a single-seater race car, being adapted very slightly for roof overhead two-seater prototypes, but it's pretty much the same science beneath it all, and you have to have ultimate faith that the car is going to stop in time, particularly when you get such a good run out of Speedway Turn 1. Well, it all began actually on the route into 6 for me, for Kevin Magnussen. He's still possibly just a bit too far away. It depends about, well, we're going to go into a caution now, so that is going to prevent these guys from performing the overtake. It's a full course yellow because of some debris on the front straight. So unrelated to this incident and this fight, but debris has been spotted and therefore the yellows are going to come out. A real shame because I was enthralled by that battle. But safety, of course, is paramount. This, I make it, will be our 10th caution of the race so far. And we had 2 hours, 3 minutes and 48 seconds of green flag running to this point. Not quite, well, actually nowhere near the longest portion of green, which happened much, much earlier on, 3 hours and 50 minutes of it. But if it's debris,
Johnny, this would be an exceptional race to watch if these guys were down the field. The fact that it's for the overall lead of the Daytona 24 Hours just makes what we're seeing now a little bit of history. We're gonna talk about this. There are lots of Daytona 24 Hours. I remember Felipe Nasr and Fernando Alonso that I watched racing wheel to wheel, very similar to this, that I can still visualise in my mind, and I'm still going to be able to do that with this one. Kevin Magnussen, Alexander Rossi, absolutely flat out battling for the overall lead of this race. This is something that we'll probably find it hard to forget.
Oh, yeah. I will certainly. And you and I witnessing it in real time. We don't yet know which way we're going to go next as far as they are concerned. But the one thing I suppose the caution does guarantee is that they're going to be even closer, those two cars, assuming that they are serviced to near perfection. And you would expect nothing else from the Konica Minolta outfit and from Chip Ganassi Racing. Now, how did the debris end up on the racetrack? I don't think this particular incident is going to provide an answer to that. But the 31 car, which is now behind the wall, a gearbox failure, which means that it can only find third gear out of the box on its in-lap, and just no straight line speed whatsoever with the revs sky high, and even the Rita Competizione Ferrari 62 nipping by on the right hand side to give you an idea of the lack of speed for Whelen Engineering Cadillac number 31. And that car now in the garage behind the wall. Team very much still working on this car, though, so they want it back into the race. There's no hint of giving up here. Everything's being done at a fast pace, but sadly, as we've remarked, it is tumbling out of contention now and very nearly being caught by, well, it'll take another eight laps or so for the leading LMP2 car to catch this stationary machine. I don't think the 31 car has ever won this race, certainly not in its current guise. We've had victories for the long associated number 5 when they were both being run out of Action Express. But tracking through the years that that 31 car will have taken part in this race, it looks like this one has always been missing from its CV, and it's going to remain the case into 2021. Shay Adam raising the potentially legitimate question is whether Mike Conway has ever won a 24-hour race. Well, we know to date the 24 Hours of Le Mans has been rather elusive to him, and this year is not going to be his year at the 24 Hours of Daytona. Just seems to pick the wrong car all the time. I mean, okay, he was up against the 8 machine with a certain Fernando Alonso driving that in, was it 2 years at the 24 Hours of Le Mans? Last year, in the September running of that event, it looked very likely that the 7 Toyota with Mike at the wheel might be able to take victory, but it wasn't to be. He is a World Endurance Champion for 2020, so we shouldn't take that away from him. But yet to win, potentially, got the facts and figures to hand. But the suggestion is that he hasn't yet won a 24-hour race, and won't do at this event either. A real shame for 31. Very little notice of that incident, and Felipe Nasr is about to be interviewed down there in front of the garage by one of the many TV crews that are here. Something that Mike Conway, some disgruntlement or disagreement with the racing gods that Mike has had perhaps in previous years. I have a funny feeling it will happen at some stage. He's got too much speed, that boy, to miss out on a 24-hour race in the whole of his career. But the 31 hasn't necessarily had the luck here either.
Consider, Johnny, it's these days with paddle shift gearboxes, it's not down to the driver to nurse the gearbox. All he can do is pull a lever. The electronics make the shift. Back in the old days when we had mechanical shifters with mechanical connections to the gearbox with a three-pedal configuration, certainly in endurance racing, you know, it was down to the driver and how he was able to drive the car and use the gearbox. And it could be if you abused the gearbox, if you missed a gear change, if you weren't as sympathetic on the machinery, that could manifest in an issue. These days, less so. You know, Felipe Nasr is sat there, foot flat down on the throttle, and he's pulling a lever to go up the box or down the box. He's got his foot on the brake and he's clicking the other lever to go down the box. The electronics is dealing with the actual mechanisms of that gear change within with the internals of the box. So it's down to the gods. And once again, the planets have not aligned for that number 31 car, and problems have befallen it. And it's just pure bad luck, really, I would say.
Yeah, and they've had plenty of it through the years at this particular event. I was suggesting that the fact that it was debris on the front straight, it could be dealt with reasonably quickly. Of course, we have to go through the sequence of pit stops, though, as well. But I think this is a moment that the Daytona track staff are choosing to actually clear up anything else that has been worrying them over the last 3 to 4 hours. So a chance to do a full track sweep, essentially, when all the cars are bunched up on one section of the racetrack behind the safety car, and therefore it is safe for the corner workers to descend onto the Daytona asphalt. Right, here come the callers then for the next bad of pit stops. One or two deciding not to bother with this one, but the race leader certainly is. Joe, you're going to be watching these stops. Perfect run, of course, for Konica Minolta into pit stall number one, but I make it another six cars following suit.
The car looked like he hit his marks, because Alexander Rossi has made the job very difficult, it looks like, for the team. He was quite close to the wall. No tyres going on, though, I noticed, Johnny. Just fuel into the Konica Minolta car, the number 10. It's done. It hasn't taken tyres. And in complete contrast, we've got tyres going onto the 01 car and fuel. Driver staying put, Rossi in the number 10, Magnussen in the number 0 car.
So that's a VP Racing Fuels pit report, and now to a VP Racing Fuels paddock report, because Stephen McAleer joins us on the line, and Joe can have a chat to him.
Hi, Stephen. Hopefully you can hear us. Hello, Stephen.
If you are satisfied with your message.
the line's dropped there, hasn't it? Sorry, Johnny, we'll try again.
I didn't think that sounded like Stephen. That's personal assistant, or more accurately, an automated message. But we'll get Stephen McAleer to the line just as soon as we can. There's a chance, therefore, to throw the spotlight onto the GT cars in a moment or two. Back out again. Ah, now, you see, I need an accurate order for the top few cars, because Alexander Rossi's pit stall is a bit further down pit lane, and therefore he triggers the timing loop slightly later than... the 10 car is the first pit stall, and he triggers the timing loop slightly later than the 0-1. So that's not necessarily a true order. And we'll get that to you just as soon as we can. But will there be an opportunity here for the Cadillac Chip Ganassi Racing car to skip ahead? I am reading it as such. 0-1 appears to be ahead of 60 on the road now, and the 10 car has had to slot into third position. So that is time, precious time lost by Konica Minolta. And you start a pit stop in first, you slip back to third position very quickly indeed. More track sweeping taking place on the back, at the end rather, of the back straightaway. GT cars, both from LM and Daytona, are due into the pits anytime now, with Nick Tandy leading GTLM in the best of the Corvettes from sister car driven by Jordan Taylor, the second of the C8s. And then it's John Edwards and Jules Gounon for BMW and Risi Competizione Ferrari, respectively, in turn ahead of Timo Glock. But the way that they are positioned behind the safety car, there's a big, big gap between Gounon and Glock, as it turns out. And still 9 laps, by the way, back to Jean-Marie Bruni in the WeatherTech Racing Porsche. But at least he is now right with the GTLM cars on the timing screen. Here we go then, GT Daytona time and GTLM as well. The LMs reach the pit lane first, of course, and it looks like all of the top four are in, Joe.
Yeah, we've got pretty much the whole of the GTLM field, led in by the leading Corvettes. Nick Tandy first in line in the number four in the silver livery Corvette. Then the number three, that's the yellow liveried Corvette, followed him in. Then we were followed in by the BMW team, RLL of John Edwards, and also the Ritchie Competition Ferrari of Jules Gounon into the pits also. So the main GTLM runners all taking advantage of this yellow flag and pitting, and all very clean and tidy and pretty much back out and on their way.
So this caution has resulted in the leading GTLM cars pitting after just 14 laps, I make it. Now, on a normal green flag stint, we've seen these cars reach double lap, 31 laps for Nick Tandy and his teammate Tommy Milner the stint before that. So we're well within the envelope. There'll probably be only half a tank of fuel available for the refuelers on these cars. Jules Gounon heading back into the race. And the 62 car, I notice, is now up to second place, so therefore splits the two Corvettes. That's good work, Joe, from Risi Competizione.
Yeah, I just want to make a comment, but before I do, because it's gone quiet in the pit area, I just want a massive shout out to James Edmonds, who's here at Daytona taking photographs, but also doing a bit of work for the team. He's also been a massive help to our team, because it's down to James. A lot of the interviews we've been hearing since this race started is down to James Edmonds, and I just want a personal thank you to James Edmonds, who's been a massive help to us in drag, literally, and I kid you not, dragging drivers to their motor room so we could speak to them on the phone, because it is so noisy in pit lane. And I really want to thank you, James. You've been a massive help. And while I'm talking, Johnny, I just wanted to pose this question. Has this yellow flag put Harry Tindall in the 55 onto the lead lap in fifth place?
That is a question that I am desperately trying to answer, and we've got a number of people trying to actually provide a solution there. I think...
it has, you know.
There's definitely a caveat here, but I think it has. And the 55, all it needed was another caution and the opportunity to gain the lap back again. The problem is there's still 2 minutes and 20 seconds being shown as a margin between Tinknell's car and Simon Pagenaud. And that's a large margin behind the safety car. So it's kind of in the wrong place. Now, it needs a wave by to get the right side of the safety car, and that shall put it onto the back of Simon Pagenaud. But until that happens, I'm not sure whether I'm entirely happy with that. It's too big a margin behind the safety car. But there may still be bunching to be done. There always is after a set of pit stops. So let's wait for that to happen. And then we can have some,
wouldn't that be a story?
Concrete information. Wouldn't it just? They were 3 laps down.
Wouldn't that be the story of the race? If the Mazda, now I'm wanting that to happen, saw the Mazda get, and this is what I was saying earlier on, isn't it? Where you've got to get into the mindset of just plugging away and keeping going, because you've got to let, once you've lost time in the pits, like the number 55 Mazda did, you've then got to be patient. You've then got to wait for the misfortune turning into good fortune and letting the race come to you. And you know what? The woman on the wall, and after that, the strategy of that car, Lena Gade, very experienced race engineer, knew exactly that was the case. And that's what we're seeing, Johnny. This is going to be a mega, mega final run into the flag for the next 5 hours.
Also receiving news that the number 3... is being told to overtake the 62 under the caution because of pit lane protocol. So 62, as I said, won the race visually to get ahead of the number 3, but it was judged to be an illegal release. And the cars presumably got to the end of pit lane, where you are allowed to be still two abreast into the single file section. And that meant that the 62 tucked ahead briefly. But we will be back to Corvettes 1 and 2 very, very shortly. There's a concern here, Joe, for Pfaff Motorsports, the number 9 Porsche that Laurens Vanthoor has just brought in. Surrounding brakes, I reckon, front right.
Steering. I'd say that was steering.
Oh, is it steering? Okay.
That they're looking beyond the brake rotor, the brake disc, and they're looking at the component parts of the front suspension, and where they were looking looked like it was the tie rod to the steering rack. They're in that sort of area. Ah, and that's Shea confirming that information from the Pfaff team that they're trying to fix their steering.
Perfect.
That was the one that Laurens Vanthoor had mentioned earlier, didn't he? They had a problem. They'd had an accident in a pit stop, and we speculated as to whether that could be them making contact with the wall, which can be the only thing that would cause a bent steering. But that's what they're trying to fix now during this yellow period.
You were quite right, by the way, about the arrival of Alexander Rossi. I said he got the easiest route into his pit stall, but he did very nearly overshoot it, and the team had to inch him back into position. I'd missed that at the time. When I say perfect, not perfect for Pfaff Motorsport, merely in the fact that we were getting exactly the same message from Joe and from Shea about the steering needing to be rectified. So it means we're on the money in terms of their latest predicament. We're about to go for a restart here. Hopefully all the GT LM cars are now in the right order, with Jordan Taylor being told by race control to get ahead of Jules Gounon, and we'll confirm whether that's happened in a moment or two. But back to green we go, with 5 hours and 12 minutes still to elapse at the Daytona 24 hours for 2021, and the DPIs waste no time at all in getting two abreast. That actually was a DPI trying to unravel itself on an LMP2 car, quite possibly, as the top four in DPI are nose to tail, and they run as follows: Alexander Rossi, Kevin Magnussen, Juan Pablo Montoya now installed into the 60 machine, and he's lost a place already to Simon Pagenaud in the Allied Cadillac racing car. So that might have actually been Pagenaud and Montoya side by side at turn two, and it was Pagenaud getting the place and catching Montoya just a little bit sleeping into turns one and two. Also, coolish tyres need to be a concern as well, as temperature is steadily building on this next lap. Up onto the high banks goes the scrap for GT Daytona. It's led by Philip Ellis for Windward Racing in a Mercedes, then Nicholas Nielsen in the AF Corsa Ferrari, and the Paul Miller Racing Lamborghini for Madison Snow in the number one car is currently third. He's ahead of Patrick Long for Wright and Lucas Stoltz for Sun Energy One, the Gradient Racing prepared Sun Energy One car number 75. Out of Speedway turn four come the race leaders, and through the tri-oval, Rossi, Magnussen, Simon Pagenaud doing the chasing, and this is exactly what we wanted. Joe Bradley joining me, Johnny Palmer in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. We mightily enjoyed this battle between Rossi and Magnussen prior to the yellow, and we've got exactly the same again, plus a Simon Pagenaud on their tail now.
Yeah, let's just throw in another IndyCar champion, shall we, and see what we get. Look at this fantastic racing onto the infield, through the kink and towards the western hairpin. It's absolute. It's nose to tail. Rossi in the 10, but 0-1 of Magnussen. Second, third is Pagenaud. As the cars come out of that hairpin, head down to that very tricky left-hand turn. Have to maximise your momentum through this. Get on the power, nurse that throttle to get the maximum traction out of there. And now it's a drag race. And Magnussen goes low on the banking and goes inside of Rossi, as it's a race now, side by side, through the banking turns of Speedway 1 and 2. And down the back straight, and it looks like Magnussen has got the edge, and he's certainly got an advantage of the inside line, and rules have been reversed, and round the outside is trying Rossi, but Magnussen makes it stick into and out of the bus stop chicane. Question is, will Magnussen switch those tyres on first? He put that car onto new tyres in the pit stop, whereas Rossi stayed on the old set, and this is what we're going to see. Magnussen now an advantage of new rubber.
That is exactly the overtake he wanted to pull off the previous stint into the bus stop, but couldn't do it because only was given the outside line by Alexander Rossi. Fantastic driving off Speedway 2 to give him the inside line, but I was impressed by the accurate straight line speed, and I thought Rossi might have had an opportunity to defend from the outside there. In the end, it didn't turn out like that. Great car placement from Danish driver Kevin Magnussen, and he just turned in at the perfect point to make sure that Rossi couldn't do likewise.
It was the traction out of the left-hander onto the banking where Magnussen had a little bit more grip that enabled him to get the momentum to get alongside Rossi into the first part of that banking through Speedway 1 and maintain that momentum all the way through Speedway 2 and onto the back straight, where he really did extend that lead. And now look at the gap as they go back out that same part of the track as what I've just been describing. Magnussen has pulled out probably a 10-car gap now between his Cadillac Chip Ganassi racing car and the Konica Minolta Acura as they went out there onto the back straight once more, and it's Magnussen very much into a solid lead, I would say, JP.
I have to say, it's phenomenal rotation that Kevin Magnussen is getting from that Cadillac through turn six, which is the corner you're talking about. And you've taught me a little bit about the importance of getting the car turned as quickly as possible in our sort of one day of karting that we get when we go to racetracks. And that solid axle that you get on a go-kart, it's very different technology utilised in these cars, but it is about getting the car pointed in the right direction as early as possible and then getting the power off the corner.
Yeah, absolutely. A little bit different in these cars, but they have got, which is for, you know, a limited slip diff, and there's the diff settings to give them the different, the way that the differential works across the rear axle. So it's very, very similar to what I was trying to get across to you on a card, Johnny. And Magnussen, being the type of driver he is, he will want, and I think Rossi's in the same category, really. These guys like a car that is pointy at the front end and has the rear end just come round. And once the car is pointing in the direction you need, then that's the momentum that you want, and the car will punch out of the corner. And none more so than that sweeping left-hander onto the banking for Speedway Turns 1 and Speedway Turns 2. It's all about keeping the momentum of that car up, and the traction out of that corner is all important.
Plenty happening elsewhere in the race, as you would expect right after a caution and a safety car, of course. There's been a lead change in LMP2 with Ryan Dalziel for Era Motorsport now to the sharp end to overtake Tim Bourret. Christopher Meese is in third position. And in GT Daytona, Patrick Long had got up to third position. Lucas Stoltz, though, flirting with that spot as well in the Sun Energy 1 Mercedes. Ellis leads the class, Nielsen second, and then, pretty much even Stevens third and fourth for Stoltz and for Long. There's been a problem, though, with the pit stop, hasn't there, for 0-1? You and I treated to what had happened in the pit stop a moment or two ago, and this looks suspiciously like a drive-through now for Kevin Magnussen.
A bit of a story spoiler as Magnussen comes into the pits to take a drive through, and the reason he's been given a drive through, he had wheel rotation whilst the car was still on the jack stands. It's just a minuscule amount of mistiming there from Kevin Magnussen. The car was still on the stands, about to be dropped when he put the car in gear and let the clutch out, basically. And that made the rear axle spin up. That's not allowed in the regulations for safety reasons. It's quite logical and it's a good rule. But Kevin Magnussen is paying that penalty now. And he's going to be dropped. He's dropped right off the leaders. He's into GTLM land there and having to, in fact, he might even be into GTD land and having to make his way through traffic. That's going to delay him trying to get back on terms with the leading pack.
A real shame. Not least for us enjoying that battle to this point, but I have a funny feeling that those cars will find each other a little bit later on in the piece. Maybe not with Rossi and Magnussen as the drivers, but they put a brilliant show on, and I don't think you can ever take that overtake away from us. Both the aborted one when Magnussen tried to go around the outside into the bus stop, and then when he finally did pull it off up the inside of Alexander Rossi. Two fabulous memories from this year's Daytona that will be difficult to forget. And we're still left with two cars out front, by the way, because now Rossi has a different liveried Cadillac in his rearview mirror. This time it's Simon Pagenaud for Ally Cadillac Racing and the number 48 car. And only a second adrift of those two is Juan Pablo Montoya for Meyer Shank Racing. So still plenty of entertainment out front. And Magnussen will slot back into fourth position. So he's still ahead of Jonathan Bomarito, who incidentally is very definitely now onto the lead lap for the Mazda DPI squad. So Harry Tinknell switched to Jonathan Bomarito in the last pit stop. And the 2 minutes that I was concerned about was just the extent of the safety car train. In fact, it was taking that long for the cars to go through the timing loop, and that was the differential at much, much slower speed. And it is condensed now to, 55 seconds from race leader Rossi back to J-Bomb, but onto the lead lap. And you can really attack the race from there. This is not done and dusted as far as Mazda are concerned. Speaking of which, we are very close now to a 19th hour of this year's race being completed, and therefore right here on RS2 IMSA Radio, where we're bringing you live coverage of the 59th edition of the Rolex 24 at Daytona, it is time for a Mazda in-race update. That sees Alexander Rossi leading after 632 laps for the Konica Minolta Acura squad in car number 10. Just that half-second advantage. Blinken, you'll miss the two that lead the race as they cross the line through the tri-oval. They're just exiting turn two now and heading onto the infield proper. Simon Pagenaud in hot pursuit then in the first of the Cadillacs for Ally Cadillac Racing. That's car 48. And then Juan Pablo Montoya in the pink and purple and black number 60 car for Meyershank Racing with Kerb Agajanian in their Acura ARX05. So third place for Juan Pablo, fourth place for a recovering Kevin Magnussen after the drive-through penalty after his rear wheels were spotted rotating before they had made contact with the ground once again. Jonathan Bomarito running around in fifth, but back to the lead lap. And this is where there's more changes that have happened, because in LMP2, the 18 Ryan DL Era Motorsport Orica leads the class now, and Christopher Mees is up to second place for Dragon Speed, having got by Tim Bouret in the opening exchanges of this particular stint. He's built himself a 2 second advantage now over the Frenchman. That's 18-82 and the 8 cars then, first, second and third in LMP2. Sadly, the number 31 car is still in the pits, having all of that work done on its gearbox. It got stuck in third gear, did the Wheel and Engineering Cadillac, and a car that has had terrible luck at this race through the years. Looks like the bad luck is following that car once again in 2021. It's not out of the race yet, but it is out of contention. Fourth place in the LMP2 category is the 51 car of Austin Dillon, and then it is the 11 machine of Thomas Merrill, in the number 11 Wynn Autosport car. GTLM, led by Nick Tandy for Corvette, the first of the C8Rs from Jordan Taylor, only 0.8 of a second between those two. Jesse Krohn for BMW runs third in the black number 24, and Jules Gounon, having made his way up to second coming out of the last phase of pit stops, it was determined that he jumped line coming out of pit road and should have tucked in behind the second of the Corvettes, but chose to split them and then was given the instruction to reverse those positions. Since then, Jules Gounon from Rissi Competizione has slipped to fourth place, with Bruno Spengler in fifth. In LMP3, Scott Andrews leads the category in the 74 Riley Motorsports Ligier. Second place is Wayne Boyd for Short Creech Motorsport, and third in LMP3, although losing places on some GT Daytona cars, Moritz Kranz for Mulner Motorsports. And the top five in GT Daytona, Philip Ellis leads for Windward Racing with their Mercedes 57. The 21, Nicholas Nielsen Ferrari from AF Corsa's second. Lucas Stoltz, number 75, Sun Energy One Mercedes is third. It's a Porsche next, the Patrick Long driven Wright Motorsport Porsche, number 16. And Madison Snow, race winner here last year, car number one for Paul Miller Racing, is running in fifth. That's the latest Mazda in-race update right here on IMSA Radio.